College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Ivan Maisel, your host today. Today's episode of the College Football Podcast is brought to you by Allstate. Mayhem made an appearance in the college football playoff weekend. It was everywhere in Clemson, Ohio State, and it was a little bit quieter in LSU and Oklahoma. Although, LSU's offense created a lot of mayhem for Oklahoma's defense. And I'd imagine both Dabo Swinney and especially Ryan Day could have done without some of the mayhem that transpired in their semifinal. All of which is to say that this should serve as a reminder to you, listener, mayhem could always show up on your turf. But it doesn't have to. Get better protected with Allstate and leave mayhem on the football field. Hello, everyone. An incredible semifinal weekend. As I said earlier, Ivan Maisel here instead of Kevin Negandhi. And instead of Herbie and Pollock today, we have two of my colleagues at ESPN.com who covered the semifinal games. The LSU-Oklahoma game was covered in part by David Hale. David joins us from his where are you, David?
I'm in Charlotte at the moment. But, you know, that's a good question. I could be anywhere. So
you could be anywhere, but you are in Charlotte at the moment. And Andrew Adelson, who covered the Fiesta Bowl, the incredible game between Clemson and Ohio State, joins us as well back home in Florida. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, Ivan and David.
I can't imagine two more different experiences than those two games. David, what did you do for the last three quarters? Were you playing solitaire on your phone, catching up on a podcast? How'd you handle that?
Yeah, it was nice. You could really spread out in the press box in the second half because half the folks who had been there were up and gone by that point.
Nothing to write about here.
It was absolutely, I mean, there was no drama after really probably midway through the second quarter. And it was really a question of what records might get broken. How long is Joe Burrow going to stay in the game? Might we see 100 points? I mean, there was the drama was at that level where it wasn't anything about who was going to win. It was just about how bad it was going to be. And the answer was pretty bad.
The answer was pretty bad. I loved your piece, and the number in it that got me was that LSU was ahead 35-7 before Oklahoma gained 100 yards of total offense, which is just incredible. Of all the stats that show LSU's dominance in that 63-28 victory, that one really took my breath away.
Yeah, and, you know, the crazy thing is that afterwards, talking to the LSU players, I don't think any of them were particularly surprised. I mean, they were pretty outspoken about the fact that they thought they were going to blow them out. I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire said he thought 50 points was probably a good starting point. Apparently, Joe Burrow predicted 7 touchdown passes before the game. Honestly, does any of it surprise you with Joe Burrow at this point? If he'd called a shot and said 10, he probably would have gotten that too. but that's just how confident they were going in. I think they saw massive mismatches on paper and on film going into that game. And then the thing that LSU does to you so well, and it's funny because I talked to Dave Aranda afterwards, and I think his frustration comes from the fact that his defense has maybe let off the gas a little bit as the offense has dominated, but I guess that's sort of human nature to some extent. But LSU just has this way of utterly demoralizing you before you even have a chance to like realize that the game started. And that was certainly the case with Oklahoma, where they had sort of a big play to CeeDee Lamb early, but aside from that, couldn't do much of anything on offense. And the defense just had no answers. And even when the defense was in good position, I mean, there was the one play I remember to Terrace Marshall, the catch that he had is Oklahoma got good pressure. Burrow rolls out of the pocket. He's sprinting towards the sideline. He probably should have thrown that ball away. It was a very ill-advised pass. He tosses it into coverage, and Marshall just goes up and comes down with it no problem for like a 25-yard gain. And then a few plays later.
I wanted to vote for him for the Heisman again after that play. I mean, that was one of those, oh no, he didn't, as it's in the air. And
yeah,
and you know, but it, yeah, as you said, Marshall
coach,
just
no, yes.
Exactly. Yeah, sure. Marshall made a great play on the ball. With, and I don't know that this even matters at this point, but I have to ask, which side of the arrogance line do you think Burrow's toes are on? Because they're usually right up to the line.
It's probably on the right side of the line now. If this had been LSU versus Ohio State, it would have been very interesting to see how he tiptoed around that line, because I think he's got a lot of that sort of Baker Mayfield swagger to him. He's probably about it as Baker was. Yeah. But he's just got this chip on his shoulder mentality where, I asked him, before the, awards and Heisman and stuff, I said, you know, could you have imagined this time last year, you'd be sitting here about to win a Heisman, about to go to the playoff, after all of the dismissive talk about you and LSU? And he was like, hell yes, that's what I thought we'd be doing. I mean, there is not a shred of concern or anxiety or self-deprecation in him. It does not exist.
Andrea, you had obviously the much more interesting game, and I was struck at your piece about the nine biggest moments of the game. It really, to me, depends on whether you're an Ohio State fan or not as to how you view those moments. And that you can rail about the close officiating calls, or you can look at it and say, well, if any of those early three field goals had been touchdowns, we wouldn't be having this discussion. So I'm curious, as you think about, you know, Ohio State and where that game came out and how they lost it. What did you come away with in terms of your view of Ohio State?
Well, there could have been 20 key moments. It was hard narrowing it down just to nine because of the sheer insanity of what happened in that game. But I do think Ohio State lost the game before the targeting call even happened. You just mentioned the field goals. Three field goals on three trips inside the red zone in the first quarter and a half. And if you're Ohio State and you're playing the defending champs, you gotta give them the kill shot, so to speak, when you have the opportunity. And they had those opportunities. They were out scheming, out coaching, out playing, out physicaling, out everything Clemson at the beginning of the game. Clear domination up front on their lines. And I thought they were going to win the game for that reason, after the way they came out and played. So to settle for field goals instead of touchdowns when you should have probably been up 28-0, to me, is where Ohio State lost it. And we can sit here and talk about the targeting and whether it should have been called or whether or not. That was textbook targeting as written in the rule book. So that was the absolute correct call. The fumble later in the game, the scoop and score, that one is the one we can sit here and talk about and debate. But if you're griping about officiating, in Ohio State's case, it's pretty rich griping against officiating when the most controversial officiating call in the history college football championship games benefited Ohio State.
That's funny that you said that. I was thinking you were going to the Ohio State Michigan fourth down call, but you pivoted and went all the way back to Ohio State Miami.
That too. But you can't, you had so many opportunities in that game to sit here and start blaming the officiating or come up with wild conspiracy theories ignores the fact that Ohio State was the better team. They just did not play the better game.
How much of that do you think, and I have, you know, I'm assuming everybody who's listening to this already knows the final score. I have not mentioned it. It was 29-23. How much of this, if any, was, in your mind, was that Clemson had been there before and or that Dabo Swinney had been there before?
And or the fact they have Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, who, with the game on the line, I could not pick two different players to try and win the game for me than those two guys, especially Travis Etienne. When you look at what he brings to the table for Clemson, still to me, probably the most underrated player in college football, despite the fact we've seen him make plays like this now for three playoffs in a row. When Trevor Lawrence got in the huddle for their opportunity there to win the game, you know, Jeff Scott said afterward, their co-offensive coordinator, was very reminiscent to him about what Deshaun Watson did at the end in Tampa to win the national championship in the 2016 season against Alabama. Just very cool, calm, and collected, and told these guys, hey, look, we got this. Trust me. We've done this before. We know how to win games. We know how to close it out. And for him to sit there and just pick apart that defense, which had essentially stopped them for a good portion of the game, and rely on Etienne in the passing game, which is an area where he has blossomed this season, I just think is a tribute to what those two guys can do, but also the fact that Clemson just, they don't get rattled. They don't get in situations where suddenly they're flustered. Their players know what to do in those pressure situations, and now you flip the script and look at Ohio State in the pressure situation at the end of the game, and there's a miscommunication between Justin Fields and Chris Olave, and the game ends because of it. There was no such miscommunication on the Clemson side, because I just think this team has a supreme confidence about them, and they have been through this before, and so they know what to do in those situations.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because in the third quarter, fourth and one at the Clemson 23, they played it boldly, and they scored the touchdown, you know, Fields to Olave. But then in the fourth quarter, in the last 4 minutes, not only did the offense make a fatal error, but the defense just didn't know what to do. You know, Clemson went the length of the field in four plays. Let's hold that thought, because we need a word from our sponsors, Allstate and Goodyear.
Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. Now back to the show.
LSU and Clemson, I will predict, my first prediction is that we will see a lot of bad leads about Death Valleys and Tigers and so forth. David, as you have begun to think about this matchup, what's your initial takeaway?
Well, obviously I can say that I think the Tigers will win and there'll be a celebration in Death Valley.
You're not listening.
Sorry. I'm marginally biased from having just witnessed this utter dismantling of Oklahoma by LSU's offense. But I think that the from a schematic X's and O's standpoint, the thing that really stood out to me from Saturday was that Clemson's defensive front just is not what it was last year. And it's not to say it's bad, but it is not what it was last year. And there was so many times where even when they got a little bit of pressure on Justin Fields and could kind of move him around in the pocket, they weren't getting to him enough to really take him out of his rhythm or take passes offline. And if you do that against Joe Burrow, he is just going to destroy you. And they're so deep at receiver. I mean, whether it's Ja'Marr Chase or Terrace Marshall or Justin Jefferson or Thaddeus Moss, but they're just so, there's so many weapons that they have down the field that I think Clemson's back end of their defense is certainly much better than Oklahoma's was. But the bottom line is, if you're not going to pressure Joe Burrow, I just don't know how you slow down that LSU offense at all. And I saw some concerns there if I'm Clemson. I don't know how you – I mean, Brent Venables did a wonderful job of dialing up pressure at key moments, but they were not getting that pressure from the front four. And there's just – if you've got to make trade-offs in terms of pressure versus coverage, LSU is going to burn you.
No, I mean, that's a great point that, you know, Oklahoma did a great job of taking away Ja'Marr Chase, and it, as you pointed out in your piece, and it didn't really matter, you know. Andrea, what do you think about it when you look at this, begin to look at this matchup?
Well, I agree with that completely. And the fact that Clemson has some liabilities at safety, Isaiah Simmons played, I think, the majority of the second half at safety, which he had played safety. They move around a lot, but not his more natural position. I think was a major adjustment they had to make because they were getting burned there early on in the game. And so when you look at the wide array of talent they have at the skill positions, that is a concern. And Clemson has not gotten pressure with its front all year. And that has been something that Brent Venables has been able to mask with the scheming, which I think is a reason why a lot of us feel like this might be his best job because of some of the deficiencies they had up front this year compared to what we've seen out of this team the last several years. The fact that they were still so dominant, even though they did not have a dominant front. But a lot of that was exposed against Ohio State, and LSU clearly has advantages now at receiver and quarterback compared to what Ohio State had. I think offensively for Clemson, to me, the bigger question I had early in that game was why they weren't using Etienne more. And I think it's because they felt they could run with Trevor Lawrence, as we saw throughout the game. They were able to do that. I think Travis Etienne has got to be a giant part of this game plan going into the game. They need Justin Ross and T. Higgins to be healthy, which they were not in the game against Ohio State. They both got banged up early. And the 2 weeks will absolutely help. But if those two guys are out of it, it's going to be extremely difficult for Clemson against LSU, which, by the way, nobody is really even talking about this, but the improvement that defense has made from where they were at the beginning of the year to where they are right now, playing with that confidence and that swagger that we all expect LSU to play with defensively, I think is one of those stories that people should be talking about now, because they got criticized early in the year. What happened to LSU's defense? What are they, in the Big 12 now? Now we're starting to see what we expect out of the LSU defense, and that could be an issue for Clemson offensively as well.
Yeah, I think Derek Stingley might be the most under-talked about player in the country. I mean, I think he's getting talked about slightly more now, but I was talking to CeeDee Lamb before the game, and he was saying that's the best freshman corner I've ever seen, and I'm not sure I disagree with him. Derek Stingley has been just next level impressive. And, you know, the other thing about that, and I've said this with LSU's defense all year, is I think when your offense starts playing like LSU's offense does, there's a change that in the dynamic of what the defense has to face too. So they're on the field more, their breaks are smaller because you're scoring in three plays instead of 12. And again, as Dave Aranda said, there's just a human factor to it in that, the quote he gave me was great. He's like, you know, you see the offense just smiling and celebrating and high-fiving after scoring yet another touchdown, and you're yelling at your guys, no, be pissed off, we're angry right now. And it's just, it's hard to convince your guys on defense to play angry when you're up 42-0. And so I think there's been an adjustment period. And so that's what a lot of this season was. But as Andrea pointed out, these last few weeks have been quite the opposite of that. This is that LSU defense, which has been very talented all year, really finding its niche and starting to kind of come into its own.
Andrea, you pointed out Trevor Lawrence taking the ball and running, which was something we have not seen in two seasons. How early did that go into the game plan? How much of it was what they saw Saturday night? Did you get any sense of how that became such an important part of the offense?
So we've seen Trevor run in bits and spurts, and the issue there was that he didn't like to slide, especially early on in his career. And Dabo would always have to remind him, Trevor, if you're going to take off and run, please make sure you slide, because he was taking a lot of hits. And so he's gotten to that point, but they've only used it, sporadically. He's run, and Dabo has insisted for the last 2 years that we don't appreciate the type of athlete that Trevor is, especially with his legs. And everyone just kind of, oh, ha ha, Dabo. Yeah, sure, sure. But the manifestation of that happened against Ohio State. And I think the reason we saw him end up as the team's leading rusher, as mind-blowing as that sounds, is because they did see specifically on tape as they were watching what Ohio State does defensively, that there would be some opportunities for him to run. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that they thought the linebacker core for Ohio State maybe was the weak point on that defense. When you look at the lockdown corners and obviously who they have up front, they thought the middle of the field would be open for them and ended up working out that way. But Trevor Lawrence and Chase Bryce, the backup quarterback, they were watching the game tape again the night before the game, and they kind of realized, yeah, the coaches are, this is going to be there for us. The coaches are right. And they specifically went to the coaches and said, Trevor wants to do this. Trevor wants to be a big part of the game plan. And so that was part of just, I think, the adjustment of what we saw from Clemson offensively, especially knowing after T. Higgins went out early, they would have to do something a little bit different schematically because they weren't going to have their big play receiver with them. And let me just tell you, on the 67-yard touchdown run, I thought for sure he's going to – Ohio State's not going to let him outrun them. They're definitely going to catch him from behind. And when they didn't, everybody in the press box was just staring in disbelief. I mean, we all had seen Trevor run. We all knew he was capable as a runner, but to outrun the Ohio State defense the way that he did, that was next level. That was something we had not seen from him at any point in his career.
Real quick, sorry, about Clemson, that I think is just so fascinating, is that we all kind of followed along with the narrative early that maybe this offense is just not quite what it was. And, it's, you know, Dabo spent the early part of the season wanting to get Trevor more involved in the run game. He spent the early part of the season trying to build up the receiving skills for Travis Etienne. You know, they talked a lot about, you know, we all took the North Carolina game as the game that defined Clemson. Look, they're not that good. And Dabo said, no, I had never seen Trevor Lawrence have to make a must-have drive in the fourth quarter of a close game before. I'm glad we had that. Dabo's always 10 steps ahead of us, man. It's amazing how all of those things that we were kind of criticizing the team for all came to pass here in this game and came out just the way Dabo had wanted it to.
And they had the appropriate answer. That's a great point. Is there, so David, you see the critical matchup as being the LSU O line versus the Clemson D line. Is there something else, Andrea, that we should, in terms of matchups, that intrigues you?
Well, nobody wants to talk about special teams, but there's no way Clemson wants to get into a field goal kicking contest at the end of the game, because that is the one area where they have a major, major issue. It's been an issue for them all season long. So if this game has to come down to a field goal, I wouldn't be surprised if Dabo does whatever it takes to try and go for it on fourth down, because I don't know how confident they feel in their kicking game right now. And the other one, as I mentioned earlier, I really feel is Isaiah Simmons and the way they decide to use him in this game because of all the skill that they have, not just at receiver, but also with Edwards-Helaire in the backfield. And also maybe trying to use him to get after Joe Burrow. Of course, if you try and do that, you're leaving guys open in the back end. So that to me is the chess match of, all right, we had to use Isaiah Simmons a little bit differently in this game against Ohio State. He's a jack of all trades. He can do a ton of stuff for that defense. But now, where do we want to try and utilize him the most in this matchup against LSU? Because he is such a vital part of this defense and the way this defense operates that I would expect him to be used in a different way against LSU than what we saw against Ohio State.
That's interesting. You know, this is one of those cases nobody wanted to see the 2 week respite between the semifinals and the championship game, but everybody will be healthy. You know, Edwards, I don't know if Edwards-Helaire will be healthy, but he'll be a lot closer to it and everybody gets a chance to rest up. And in that, and yet they won't have the rust on them that we used to see when you had 4 or 5 weeks between the end of the season and the championship game in the BCS era. So, Not that I want to wait 2 weeks for the championship game every year, and it's really only going to happen this year, but I kind of like the idea that we'll see teams closer to full strength than we might have otherwise. And as far as Clemson and the kicking game, it just reminds me that they really lost their first appearance in the playoff championship against Alabama because they lost the special teams, and it looked as if Dabo fixed that, you know, over the last couple of years. But I think at the end of the day, what that says to me is kind of where we started with what, David, you were saying, is that it's hard to find a soft spot anywhere with LSU.
Yeah, I mean, that's and as you talk about the sort of the two-week break, I couldn't help but think about what the next 2 weeks are going to be like for Brent Venables and sitting in his office and clicking through film and having 2 weeks to figure out some way to find that hole, that one soft spot with LSU. This is a very good coaching staff at Clemson and yes, certainly talented and experienced players. And 2 weeks to prepare is probably not, you know, I think if you ask Brent, he'd probably tell you I'll take 2 years to prepare for this LSU offense. But it's, you know, we can all sit here and say, yeah, there's no soft spots. We're not as smart as those guys that are doing it. I'll be very interested to see what they come up with over the next 2 weeks because nobody has done a good job of finding the soft spot for LSU yet this year, but there's probably not a coaching staff in America I would be more confident in finding such a soft spot if it exists than the guys at Clemson.
Okay, I want to finish on this topic, and it's a little more macro than just this game. Andrea, does it the discrepancy in talent and ability between LSU and Oklahoma, and in the comments that the LSU players made after the game about, you know, looking at the video and seeing how undersized Oklahoma was, are you concerned at all that we're getting into a even more deeply into a haves and have nots in this game?
I've been concerned about that for the last couple of years. And look, what happened to Oklahoma shouldn't be a shock considering they've made the playoff and have yet to win a playoff game because of liabilities with their defense. You know, what happened in that game, I think, was extremely predictable. And honestly, hearing the LSU players say that maybe was the fifth best defense that they played this year, probably, giving them a little bit too much credit, number five, to be honest. That probably was in the bottom half of the defenses that they played this year, particularly in the conference that they play in. So I was having this conversation earlier about the fact that, you know, Clemson has gotten a lot of criticism because of the conference that they play in. Well, let's just be real and honest about it. Oklahoma has done to the Big 12 what Clemson has done to the ACC, and Ohio State's doing to the Big 10 what Clemson is doing to the ACC. Alabama, for most of their run, has done the similar to the SEC. And so when you look at where college football is right now, it almost feels like there's only a group of 3 to 5 teams who are competitive at that elite level, and it's the same teams year in and year out. So what does this mean for the overall health of college football? When are we going to be able to start seeing some other teams get in there? And the other aspect of this is it's Southern teams. It's all these Southern teams that have won championships and are competing for it. So does this mean the sport is more regionalized than it ever has? And therefore, is it turning off a larger portion of the college football fan base in general from wanting to watch? Those are concerns today, like they were a year ago. And I'm not sure what the answer is to that, because it doesn't feel like there's any team out West or in the Midwest who can compete or challenge what the South has going right now.
Maybe the answer, yeah, David, is to expand the playoff, but I don't want to go too far down that road, but.
I think there's something to be said for that, because we are in a system where the rich are getting richer, right? I mean, when you have a very small group that has access to the playoff, and look, I get the argument that what happened on the field in Atlanta on Saturday does not speak to the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth best teams also needing to be in the playoff. It was pretty clear who the better team was. I don't know that anybody else was going in and having a much better day against LSU than Oklahoma did. But what happens is Oklahoma gets money from this, exposure from this. They get to keep building off of going to the playoff every year, even if they're not winning. What has been the case in the Pac-12 when they're not even sniffing the playoff, basically after September for the last few years? I mean, the last time a team west of the Mississippi won a national championship was Texas. That was 14 years ago. And I actually looked this up because I was curious. In the 14 years since then, we've had seven different national champions. In the 14 years before that, we had 12 different national champions. So what you're seeing is exactly what you're asking, Ivan, is that the pool is getting shallower and shallower. And I think to some extent, it's a good thing, because we get to see these teams like Clemson and LSU and many of the Alabama teams of recent years that are fantastic. I mean, they are the absolute epitome of good college football. And I know you know it, Ivan, as well as anybody, when you start trying to put together the list of the best college football teams of all time, it is a very difficult thing to do. But the names from just the last probably 7 to 10 years that we could put in there, whether it was those like 2011 and 12 Alabama teams or the 2013 Florida State team, last year's Clemson team. I mean, there's some names just in the last 10 years that probably belong in that conversation as among the best ever. But the flip side of that, the expense of this, is that we have an entire half of the country and probably more, as Andrew said, it's really been the Southeast that's giving us real talent at this point. So half the country doesn't care about college football because their college football teams are not in a position to win anything. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, maybe playoff expansion does help even that playing field. I've been an advocate that to some degree, opening up player compensation, whether through name, image, likeness or something maybe more direct, could actually help shift some of the talent around a little bit more. I think opening and making transfers easier actually helps distribute talent better. But at the end of the day, there's not like this governing force in college football the way there is in professional sports, where you can institute a salary cap that forces talent just to be more at an even level. I mean, this is what's going to happen. It's sort of capitalism at its finest, is that the rich are going to keep getting richer because they've got all the advantages. And if you're an elite recruit and you're not picking up and going out to schools that haven't been competitive literally in your lifetime, you're going to go to the teams that you've seen win. And at the end of the day, the teams with the most talent tend to win the most. And so that's what we're seeing.
Well, having solved absolutely nothing, we're going to leave it there. Andrea Adelson, David Hale, thank you very much. For Ivan Maisel, thank you for listening. That's it for today's episode of the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock.